Welcome back to our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. I want to thank our sponsor, sponsors for this Friday, Erev Shabbos. First of all, sponsored anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia Ben Dov, Yehuda Leib Chaim. Our learning should be a continuation for an aliyah for his neshama. I also want to dedicate this morning's learning for the yahrzeit of Moshe Ben Avram, my father's yahrzeit, which is tomorrow. It's his 20th yahrzeit, which is obviously significant, and our learning should be an aliyah for his neshama as well. And we'll throw in for a refuah shleima for all Chole Yisrael, anyone who's in need of refuas hanefesh or refuas haguf. As Mr. Senders always points out, when we speak about healing in Judaism, we don't just do it in a physical sense, but we do it in a mental sense as well. We always daven not just for the body, but for the mind as well. And so it should be refuah shleima for all of Klal Yisrael as well. If you're interested in sponsoring a future class of behind the bima of Three Ideas in 30 Minutes, please be in touch with me or Lee in the office, and we'll be happy to facilitate that for you. Okay, we have three ideas in 30 minutes. I always wonder where to start, but I'm going to start a little political, not really political, but you'll see what I'm talking about in just a second. And that is an idea that I came across that I thought is magnificent. It was a Dvar Torah that was shared in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. I don't know where that is. I don't know who lives there, but it was in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. The story is told about Rav Simcha Schweppes, who was a student of the Brisker Rav, student of the Mir Yeshiva, Baranovich, became a Rosh Yeshiva eventually in Torah Vadas in New York. And during the war, he had made it to Japan with the Mir Yeshiva. In 1941, he was able to come to the United States. And like many people at the time, his main focus when coming to the United States was to try to get other Jews out, particularly, for his perspective, those yeshiva students that were stranded in Shanghai. As it happened, Parshas Kisetze, 1941, Rav Schweppes ends up in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, which I'm probably botching the pronunciation of that, and I'm sure I'll get emails from someone who lives in McKeesport afterwards, but it's the best that I could do. So he asked the Gabayim of the two shuls for permission to make a financial appeal on behalf of the yeshiva Bachrim that are stranded in Shanghai, and the Gabayim refused. They explained that Sukkot time, they always do an appeal for federation, and they were afraid that if they open up the Pandora's box of appeals for Yeshiva Bracharim, so it'll have a negative effect on the other appeal, which is coming up on Sukkot time. So as it turns out, there was a bar mitzvah in one of the shuls that Shabbos with a big kiddush. And at the kiddush, Rav Schweppes asks the father of the bar mitzvah boy, he says, "Do you all mind if I make a little appeal at the kiddush?" Right now, he's no longer dependent on the Gabayim. Now he is dependent on the bar mitzvah boy's father. And the bar mitzvah boy's father agrees. Rav Schweppes gets up at the bar mitzvah in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, and says the following Dvar Torah that I want to share with you today. The Dvar Torah is as follows. Torah says, in this week's Parsha, that you're not allowed to marry someone from Ammon and Moab. Why? Because we know that they didn't greet us with bread and water when we were on the road leaving after Egypt. Now, the question Rav Schweppes asks is such an obvious question. What would be the Havamina that Ammon and Moab would give us any bread and water, right? We know that when two countries are at war, so there's an embargo, there's a trade embargo, they're not allowed to conduct business with one another. And so, if the United States is at war with Japan, which is at the time when Rav Schweppes was speaking, that was the case. So we know that there was no trade that was taking place between the United States and Japan. We know that it was even more than that, which is that if you were in the United States at the time, you were very reticent of any Japanese people living in America. You were convinced they were spies. You were convinced that they didn't have America's best interests in mind. So there was a complete breaking off of the United States and Japan. So he asked, then what is it that the Torah is complaining against Ammon and Moab for not providing the Jews with food and drink? There was an embargo. No commerce was taking place. Of course the government didn't allow any trade to go on between countries during times of war. So if that's the case, what is the Torah's argument against Ammon and Moab? Here the Torah says you can't marry into Ammon and Moab because they didn't give you food and water. Of course they didn't give you food and water. You were at war with one another. There was an embargo between the two countries. There was no trade taking place between the two countries. So why is it that we're faulting the descendants of Ammon and Moab? Rav Schweppes answers something that I think is not only a beautiful Dvar Torah, but obviously for us, it is very powerful with the geopolitical events of this past week in Afghanistan. And Rav Schweppes answered at that time, again, it was 1941, Obviously, there was a lot more going on there. But Rav Sheps answers the following. He says, yes, when there's a war between two countries, there's no trade between those two countries. But when it comes to refugees, stateless people who do not belong to any country or people who are in need, that's different. Because countries might go at war with each other, but they're never at war with refugees. There are no wars with refugees. And therefore, the Torah tells us that they're upset in Ammon and Moab, not for waging battle against the Jewish people. That would have been fine. Countries are allowed to go to war with each other. But you know what they are at fault for? For ignoring the needs of stateless people. For ignoring the needs of individuals who are in needs. In other words, whatever was happening between Ammon and Moab and the Jewish people, whatever was happening politically, whatever was the protocols of states, whatever the embargo, the trade wasn't allowed, whatever that was, that's irrelevant because it's downright wicked and cruel. It's downright wicked and cruel to ignore the suffering of individuals, to not focus on countries as a whole, but to remember that a country is made up of individuals. And so in the Jewish nation, says the Torah, that countries can go to war, but you know what there can never be? There can never be cruelty and wickedness towards the individual. Sheps, at that point, ends his Dvar Torah and says that they're refugees in Japan without a country, without money, without family, without anything. And if you don't give them money, he says, then the Jews, it will be recorded in history, that the Jews in Mekisport were like Ammon and Moab who refused to contribute to stateless people. Do you want that to happen? And of course, people threw money at Rav Sheps. Most bar mitzvah boys don't ever remember their bar mitzvah speech. My guess is that bar mitzvah boy did. I share that with you this morning because I think it's a beautiful Dvar Torah. It's a question I never thought about, right? Why do we fault Ammon and Moab if nations were at war? I think it's a beautiful answer that while countries can be at war, we always have to remember that there are individuals that get caught up in this world who did nothing wrong. And it's downright cruel and wicked to ignore their plight and to ignore their suffering. And I share that with you. Of course, however you feel about the events of this past week, should America have withdrawn from Afghanistan? How should they have withdrawn from Afghanistan? That to me is irrelevant right now. Because what's relevant to me is if you watched the news this past week and you saw the images coming out of Afghanistan of normal people, people who had no part in the war, who aren't part of Taliban, who had no part of 9/11, just normal people trying to live their lives, who are all of a sudden caught up in this entire explosive situation in Afghanistan, there's at least pause and feel the plight of another human being. At least pause and recognize that there is human suffering taking place across the world. At least pause and wonder and say to yourself, is there anything I can do in my own life to lessen the pain of another person? That is an idea from Rav Simcha Sheps, shared in 1941 in Mekisport, Pennsylvania. I thought it was a beautiful, magnificent idea, and I thought an idea that was obviously very, very relevant for the week that we just had. That is idea number one of our three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number two comes from a different area of halacha, which I actually was just talking to a few guys about this morning, and that is the area of ribbis, right? We know that there's a prohibition against charging interest. Now, the details, the halachas of ribbis are enormous, very, very complicated. There's an art scroll book, I believe, that was written by Rabbi Reisman. There's an art scroll book on the laws of ribbis. It's very complicated. If you are in business and you have not taken the time to properly study the laws of ribbis, you should, because you want to make sure you're doing it right. Now, we know that there are lots of yisurim in the Torah. There are lots of prohibitions in the Torah. There's a prohibition against stealing, for example, right? Now, as we know that we have to be protective of other people's money. And yet, there's only one prohibition in the Torah where the Torah goes out of its way to this extent to show the depth of the harm caused by a violation of that prohibition, and that is none other than ribbis. So, for example, the Navi Yechezkel tells us, "Neshech nasan v'tarbis lakach v'chai lo yichyeh." Navi Yechezkel, Chazal say, "V'chai lo yichyeh." Chazal darshan based on that someone who has the practice of lending with ribbis, or taking ribbis, does not get tchias amesim. V'chai lo yichyeh. No, they're not going to be brought back to life. In fact, the Medrash tells us that when Yechezkel was commanded to awaken the dry bones, right, the members of Shevet Ephraim who left Mitzrayim and died in the valley, right, the famous Haftorah that we read. So Yechezkel saw that some bodies didn't come alive. And so he goes to Hashem and he says, Hashem, how is it? You told me everyone's going to come back to life. Some people aren't coming back to life. The Medrash records that Hashem says back to the Navi Yechezkel, yeah, you want to know why those people haven't come back to life? Because those are people who during their lifetime lent money with ribbis. And so while we have lots of onshim in the Torah, we have lots of prohibitions and lots of punishments in the Torah, very few compare to the magnitude of ribbis to the extent of she'eino kam l'tchias ha-mesim, that someone who lends with ribbis doesn't get tchias ha-mesim. And the question is why? Right? Someone who steals, someone who cheats. Again, it's bad. There are punishments for it, but they get tchias ha-mesim. Yet someone who lends with ribbis is so egregious that they do not get tchias ha-mesim. Why is this so? So Rav Mordechai Druck, who is the father of who Rabbi Goldberg always quotes, Rav Meir Druck. So Mordechai Druck in a Sefer Drash Mordechai brings the following explanation, which again, I think is somewhat intuitive, but I think it's an amazing Musar Haskel for all of us as well. Rav Kook says that they're averos and they're averos. That there are averos that are the type where a person may cheat, they might steal, they might eat non-kosher, right? We all have our pekalach, we all have our struggles, we all have our averos. We all have the things that we do wrong, that we know are wrong, and we also know that we have to fix. But says Rav Druck, there is a added level of rishus in this world. There's an added level of wickedness in this world. And that is when you see another person suffering, or you see another person struggling, and you look to capitalize off of that struggle. You look to gain financially from their suffering. So if you have someone who is unable to pay his bill, or he's going to be thrown out of his apartment, or he's facing foreclosure, and you lend him money, that's an enormous mitzvah. But if you see someone who's in that position, and you take advantage of their tzaras, you take advantage of the hardship they're going through, says Rav Druck, that is the most deplorable behavior that a human being can display. And that's the problem with ribbis, says Rav Druck. The problem with ribbis is not just that it's an avera. The problem with ribbis is not just that you were hungry for money or that you were greedy. That's not the problem with ribbis. The problem with ribbis is that you saw someone in need. You saw someone who was suffering. You saw someone who financially was going through hardship. And you sought your own personal gain through that person's suffering, that is a quality that has to be completely eradicated from the Jewish mindset. We are Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim. We're merciful people. We cannot be capitalizing off of other people's pain and suffering. Rav Druck quotes from Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld, the great Rav in Yerushalayim, and he says the same idea by Shiluach HaKan. Of course, Shiluach HaKan is sending away the mother bird when you want to take the eggs. So Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld says, wait a second. Isn't it a lot easier to catch a mother bird when she's sitting on her nest, when she's protecting her eggs? You know she's not going anywhere. Try to catch a bird, right? There's that famous scene from Rocky, when Rocky's in training, and one of the things, I forgot what the trainer's name was, but one of the things he has him do is catch birds. So try to catch a bird. You got to be really quick. Got to have good instincts to be able to catch a bird. It's really hard to catch a bird, right? But when the bird is sitting on its nest, when it's protecting its eggs, it's reluctant to walk away. So it pains the bird to run away. It's very easy for a human being to catch it. Wouldn't it be intuitive to say that's the moment that you specifically should catch the mother bird? It's a greater opportunity to grab that mother bird. Says the Torah, don't do it. Don't capitalize on the suffering and pain of the mother bird just because it makes it a little bit easier for you, just because there's a little bit of an advantage to you. That is not a midah. That is not a characteristic that we Jews want to have, that when we see someone else suffering, we maximize and capitalize off of that. And so the idea of ribbis, why it is so much more significant, why it is so much more harmful than any other avera, more than stealing, more anything, is because it's not just that you're causing a person harm, but they are capitalizing off of the suffering of a person. That midah of capitalizing another person's pain contradicts what it means to be a Jew. Contradicts the Gemara that we are Rachmanim, B'nai Rachmanim, and therefore we have to get rid of it altogether. Unfortunately, we see this in our day and age all the time. Second, a tragedy happens. Well, let's pick on American culture, right? We won't even get to Judaism yet. But in American culture, the second something bad happens in the country, second there's a shooting, right? Everyone digs in and everyone tries to capitalize off it for political purposes. No one's looking out for the best interests of the people who are just affected. You're trying to take advantage of that scenario to elevate yourself, right? They always talk about, do you know how much fundraising this person did after this incident, right? Because if you use it for political gain, you're able to capitalize. Says the Torah, that's not a Jewish quality. We don't revel in seeing other people suffer. We don't capitalize off of the suffering of another person. And so whether it's advertisements that put pictures of almanos or yesomim, of widows and orphans, and say that if you don't give money to this, you're a terrible person, right? We don't capitalize off the suffering of another person. We do what's right because we think it's right. We do what's right because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. But we don't simply try to better ourselves or to better our situation at the cost of another human being. Says Rav Druk that the reason why ribbis is so bad is because you are benefiting from the suffering of another human being, and a Jew who does that is a deplorable Jew. So ideas number one and two were somewhat similar, a little bit different. Idea number one came from Rav Simcha Sheps, right? Again, who was the Rosh Shiva, Yeshiva Torah Vadas, but in the time he was a refugee from the war in Europe, from Japan. He was raising money in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. Why is it that Ammon and Moab, what'd they do so bad? Countries were at war with each other. He said, yeah, countries could be at war with each other. But we always have to remember the people. Remember the people, that there are people suffering, that there are people that are getting caught up in this. And whether we can do something about it or not, we should at least pause and reflect upon that suffering. We should feel it, because that's what it means to be a Jew. Very much connected is idea number two from Rav Druk. Why is ribbis so bad? Why is ribbis worse than stealing? Why is it worse than eating on kosher? To the extent that she'eno kam l'tchiyas ha'meisin, that they don't get tchiyas ha'meisin. The answer is because when you take ribbis from a person's being thrown out of their apartment, a person's facing foreclosure, a person lost a job, can't pay off his bills, and you take advantage of that, that is the cruelest midah, that is the cruelest characteristic a Jew could have. Rav Druk brought then the Shiluach HaKan idea, that why is it that we can't take the mother bird? It's because, again, you're capitalizing off a mother's pain. The mother's on the nest. She's protecting her eggs. Yes, it might be easier for you to catch the bird then. Yes, it might save you some time and energy. But we can never capitalize off of the pain of another person. That is idea number two. Idea number three, and I apologize in advance for anyone who was at Mincha Maariv last night, because I shared at Mincha Maariv, and I already know that Hillel Cohen's going to give me grief about this. But I think it's such a beautiful idea, and I was reflecting upon it afterwards. And I probably wouldn't have used it at Mincha Maariv, but I realized what a magnificent idea is. So if you heard this at Mincha Maariv last night, good. It'll be some nice review. If you didn't hear this at Mincha Maariv, you are in for a doozy. And this comes from the Ben Sorer Umora. Ben Sorer Umora is really one of the most difficult to understand halachos in the entire Torah. First of all, it's a very short window of time that a person can even be a Ben Sorer Umora. The notion that a parent would kill a child, nidon al shem sofo, because of what they're going to be at the end, very hard to understand. And of course, the Gemara already comments, based on Rav Yossi Aglili, that this whole thing doesn't make sense. V'chim ibnei she'achal zet tartimar basar v'shasa chatzi lug yayin amra tori yatzal beitin l'sakel. Because this child ate a little bit of meat, because he drank a little bit of wine, so you're going to take the kid out, you're going to stone him in Beis Din? So answers Rav Yossi Aglili, Ella higia Torah l'sof daito shaben sora mora. No, the Torah already anticipates the end. Shesof migmar nechse aviv mevakish limudov einamotse. Right now, he's going to get caught up so much in his stealing that he's going to end up doing bad things. Right, he's going to want to feed. We know this by addicts nowadays, right? That an addict wants to feed the addiction, so they steal. Sometimes they steal from loved ones. They do very unintelligent things simply to feed their addiction. It's not that they have an addiction, right? So that, says Rav Yossi Aglili, is what's going to happen here. That this child is going to have these desires for meat, for wine, for, right? He's going to end up stealing, and then bad things are going to happen to him. He's going to get caught up in the wrong crowd. So we say, Yamo zakai v'al yamos chayv. So we'd rather him die pure, not die with sin, and so we kill him up. The Yerushalmi offers a different sequence of events. In the Yerushalmi, this is found in the Yerushalmi Sanhedrin Ches Zayin, for anyone who wants to look it up. But the Yerushalmi describes that there is a direct deterioration of the situation of the Ben Sora Mora. In other words, one mistake directly leads to another mistake, which leads to another mistake, and that is the direct deterioration. Listen to the words of Yerushalmi, it will blow your mind away. And again, I apologize if you heard this last night. It is that good, though. It's that good. Hashem recognized that this child is eventually going to steal from his mother and father. And he's going to also steal from other people. He's going to get involved in a bad crowd. And he's going to kill people. Now, I would stop the Gemara there, because that sounds pretty bad, right? Stealing from your mother and father, stealing from other people, murder, getting caught up in the bed. What could be worse than all those? Stealing and murder? And yet, the Yerushalmi says that there's a step further that the Ben Sora Umora is going to deteriorate into. And that is, Visofo Lishkoach Es Talmuda. And the worst thing that's going to happen in this Ben Sora Umora is, he's going to forget what he learned in yeshiva. He's going to forget his learning. He's going to forget Chumash and Rashi. He's going to forget Haschalas Gemara. He's going to forget the relationship he had with his Rebbe. Sofo Lishkoach Es Talmudo. He's going to forget his learning altogether. That, says the Yerushalmi, is the worst thing that could happen in Ben Sora. That's the worst thing. That's worse than stealing. That's worse than Horeges and Nefashos. That's worse than killing. Are you crazy? Like, really? You're going to tell me that's the worst? How does the Yerushalmi understand this as a deterioration of events? That first he's going to steal, and then he's going to murder, and then you know the worst thing that's going to happen to this child? He's going to forget his Chumash class. Forget his Chumash class. If you and I were writing these Yerushalmi, we would say to ourselves, out of all the things, that seems to be the most innocuous out of them. Okay, so he got an F on a test. Big whoop. Right? Not a big deal. Murder? Steal? No, the Yerushalmi says that's the worst out of all of it. Listen to what Rav Chaim Drukman, not to be confused with Rav Chaim Drukman, who is the head of the B'nai Akiva movement in Israel, and he says the following idea, which I think is beautiful. He says, Ela shekol od talmudo adayin bikirbo, that as long as this child continues to have a relationship with Torah, as long as the child remembers Torah, is in the parsha of Torah, has a relationship with the Rebbe, Notar sichui kilshu la tzira shel hitardrut, then there still remains hope that the situation will not deteriorate further. There still remains hope that this child will come back. L'shiyakum me'anafila, that as long as he has a connection to Torah, there's always that potential that he is going to come back. L'kach shiyechdal mimasa v'yasha b'tshuva, there's always that chance that he's going to do tshuva. Ulam achar shemik bidar deruto. But if he is deteriorated, if his nefila, if his falling out has been so significant, ad kedei kach shetalmudo ishtacheach imenu lechalutin, to the extent that he's forgotten everything, he no longer has a chavrusa, he's been kicked out of yeshiva, he no longer has a relationship with the Rebbe, lo nosar mashi ore lechuva b'tzura tivit, there's no natural way for him to return. What's going to inspire him to tshuva? What's going to give him the spiritual nourishment, the spiritual capacity to be able to do tshuva? Ein od mashiatzer oso bedarcho. There's nothing to be the floor preventing him from falling either further. Hu higia l'shafel hamadrega zeuim kena shlav hachamer biyoser. You want to know why the Yerushalmi says v'sofo lishkoach es talmudo is the worst thing? Because as long as you have a relationship with Torah, you can make many mistakes. As long as you have that relationship with Torah, in the loosest of definitions, a chavrusa, a rebbe, you remember yeshiva, then there's always that chance to return. The second you forget that, says Rav Drukman, you have lost all hope. And it's at that moment that the Torah says, "Mutav shiyamos zakai, va'al yamut chayev." At that point, we realize there's nothing else we can do. Kol od kayim chibur kilshu l'Torah, says Rav Drukman, that as long as there is a connection to Torah, yesichoy sachir l'tkuma v'latikun, there is always that pathway. There is always that hope for return. Ulam kasher yesh netek muchlat me'atorah. But when there's a complete severance with a relationship with Torah, azai afshe tamid kayemes afsherut l'tshuva hakoshel yisromu hu gadol b'yoseh. Of course, you could always do tshuva, but it's become a lot harder at this point. That, says Reb Drukman, is the message of the Yerushalmi. It is an unbelievable Yerushalmi, and I think it is so powerful for us. All that needs to remain is, in the loosest way, a connection to Torah. A Rebbe, a Chavrusa, someone in the religious world who has a positive influence on that child. As long as that exists, there's always hope. You can never give up that relationship with Torah. Says Reb Drukman, we learn from here the power of Torah. That even a child who's fallen so far, stolen and murdered, horrific acts, as long as they have a connection to Torah, there's always that chance to bounce back. And he says, that's the Musar HaSkel for us. The Musar HaSkel for us is whatever mistakes we've made over the past year, whatever shortcomings and failures we've had, if we maintain that connection to Torah, there's always that hope for us. I referenced last night, and I had never seen this anywhere, someone sent it to me in the name of Reb Pinkas. I was so excited when you have an idea and then you see it written inside. But the bracha we say in Shmon Esrei, the bracha of tshuva, we don't start off by talking about tshuva. What do we say? Right? Hashiveinu avinu le sorasecha. The very first step of tshuva is Hashiveinu avinu le sorasecha. Hashem, return me to your Torah. And only then do we say V'achzireinu b'tshuva shlima lefanecha, and let me do tshuva. But even before we get to actual tshuva, we first ask Hashem, Hashiveinu avinu le sorasecha. We have to return to your Torah. Because it's only through the return to Torah, it's the connection to Torah, which guarantees that that pathway of tshuva is always open before us. Beautiful. This was one of those got me so excited, but a beautiful idea from Reb Drukman. So we saw three ideas, two similar ideas, and one a little bit different idea. First idea was from Reb Simcha Sheps, Rashi V'Tor Midas, 1941, the difference between Ammon and Moab. Why do we fault them? The countries are at war. Countries can be at war, but we can never lose sight of human suffering, of the refugees. Ammon and Moab were wrong because, yes, they could have been upset at Israel as a people, but when you see people suffering, when you see refugees, individuals, so then you have to open up your heart. Then you at least have to feel something. We should feel something after this week. Again, wherever you sit on the political spectrum, whether you thought the president was right, wrong, it's irrelevant. There's human suffering going on in the world. We should be sensitive to it. Idea number two came from Reb Druk, about why Ribbis is so bad. Ribbis is so bad is because it is an un-Jewish idea to capitalize off another person's suffering. And when a person comes to you and says, I need help, I can't pay my bills, my mortgage, and you say, okay, yeah, okay, but I'm gonna get benefit from it. That is not a very Jewish idea. We never capitalize off the suffering of another person. Idea number three was from the Ben Sora Mora. Why is it that the Yerushalmi says, V'sofo lishkoach es talmudo, that the worst step, he's going to forget his Torah? Because as long as someone has a connection to Torah, there's always that potential for change. There's always that door opening. The second we lose that connection to Torah, all bets are off. It's a reminder for us of the value of Torah, the primacy of Torah, of the role that Torah plays in our lives to elevate us and to make us more dignified and to make us more regal. And we should never lose that connection ever whatsoever. And so again, I want to thank our sponsors, anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia, Ben Dovi, Leib Chaim, and in memory of my father, Moshe Ben Avram, whose 20th Yahrzeit is tomorrow, and Mirtz Hashem, next week, back here, same time, same place, for more Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.